The idea of teenagers hiding behind the shelter shed or ducking outside the school gates to smoke cigarettes seems to have been replaced by teens visiting the toilets or going out the back of the Oval to vape, to use an e-cigarette. I told you yesterday that the Quit Line has seen its busiest year on record of people calling for help to give up e-cigarettes, some of whom are as young as 13. And today the Australian reports that over east, the New South Wales Poisons Helpline received more than 170 calls last year over concerns about children under the age of 15 being exposed to vapes and e-cigarettes. That's almost a tripling compared to the number of calls they had the previous year. Closer to home, Karratha Senior High School says it's recently seen an increase in young people vaping. And just last week, East Kimberley College held an information session for parents all about vaping. So what is driving WA teens to vape? Luke Vanderbaker is the co-founder of the Behaviour Change Collaborative, which is a social enterprise, and recently worked on a report called Being Gen Vape, looking at teen vaping in WA. Luke, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. You spoke to nearly 100 teenagers as part of this research. What did they tell you about why they vape?
It was actually a really interesting exercise, to be honest. And I think where it might be a useful place to start is what it is that we heard that parents perhaps don't understand in terms of why it is that they're sort of taking up vaping in such high numbers. But what we heard through the research was very much in the first instance that it just makes them feel better. It's easy and readily accessible, and it's very popular, so it's quite normalised in school and social settings, so quite ubiquitous, everybody's doing it. And notwithstanding that there's a recognition that it is highly addictive and potentially harmful, most of the young people we were speaking to felt that they were able to control that, and that it was probably the least harmful of the habits that they might otherwise be doing. So it wasn't seen as damaging as smoking cigarettes or drinking alcohol, for example.
So a few things to touch on there. You talk about it being readily accessible. How are young people getting introduced to vapes and how are they accessing them?
Oh, look, lots of different ways. And again, this is very much just what we were hearing from the teens themselves. So certainly social media plays a fairly large role here, and it does so, I guess, in two ways. In the first instance, teens are exposed to lots of messaging about vaping. The vapes come in sort of very attractive flavours and packaging, but most of that exposure is through private messaging or direct messaging on platforms like Instagram and Telegram also. But equally, they're able to buy and sell through those platforms, so there are drops arranged. Again, through sort of DMs and PMs, and, you know, for $25, they might be able to arrange a drop. Also, family members and friends. So friends over 18 are a main source. Siblings purchase through the internet. So there's lots and lots. We heard some really quite alarming stories about local retailers around schools who would facilitate sort of under-the-counter sales and sort of fairly sophisticated operations. So there really is a huge range of ways that teens can access them. But most, you know, in terms of when they're introduced to vaping, tends to be in social settings where there might be a vape being passed around at a social gathering or, as you sort of alluded to earlier in the introduction, you know, maybe when sort of they're entering into a toilet at school or something, there's an awful lot of vaping happening over here. Stories of, you know, people entering into rooms of vape cloud and, certainly there's a lot of challenges there for schools.
So you talk about it being quite normalised. Does it tie into, I guess, identity at all?
That's actually a really interesting question. And what we heard was no. One of the key themes that came out of the research was that vaping isn't really bound up in stereotypes or in identity stereotypes in the same way as a lot of other habits and behaviours that we might see to be somewhat problematical. So vaping, as I said, is very much seen as ubiquitous. It's something that, teens who vape will say everybody does. I think it's probably not quite that much, but certainly a lot of the prevalence data that's out at the moment, although somewhat dated, would indicate, you know, around a third have tried vaping at least once. But no, people are vaping from really any at all different sort of social groups, and there's very little judgment in school. So people aren't being judged for vaping or not vaping. It's seen as something that our young people are sort of free to make their own choices. And really the only time that judgment tends to come along is when teams are very obviously addicted, and then there's a view that they've perhaps lost control, and that's perhaps looked down on. But up until that point, it's just a very sort of normalised behaviour.
So you said there is an understanding of the risks involved. What is that understanding or that perception about the risks?
Look, there is an understanding, but it's quite vague. So the knowledge tends to be around the fact that there is nicotine. And so there is a real concern amongst teens, particularly those that are quite resilient and not vaping, that nicotine might well lead to addiction. And again, this sort of feeds into this concerns that young people might have around losing control. So fear of addiction is certainly a key issue. There's a vague knowledge of some of the key ingredients, particularly amongst older teens, but a lot of the younger teens that we spoke to, so the sort of 12s and 13s, had very little knowledge. And I mean, some even thought that, you know, the fruit juice flavouring came from fruit juices. So, yeah, quite concerning. So some knowledge of things like popcorn lung and other sort of more, immediate health impacts can cause shortness of breath. But generally, in terms of the longer health concerns, first of all, you know, there's not a great deal of evidence as to what they are because this is fairly new. And so where teens are concerned, their view is this is just something they're doing at this point in time. It's something that they'll stop. But while there may be some concerns about those short-term health harms, in the longer term, there's really not too much thinking around what impacts vaping may have later in life.
And so you heard from kids aged 12 to 13 in this research saying they were vaping?
Oh, look, yes. So our study spoke to 92 teens aged 12 to 18. So that was school years 7 to 12. And absolutely, yeah. And in fact, the groups that I spoke to were the younger boys in that cohort. And we had a good number that were vaping. So our study was pretty much half and half in terms of speaking to people who vaped and did not vape. But I think even in primary schools now, there's definitely pretty clear evidence that we're seeing vaping in primary schools, not at the same levels, but certainly it's there. There was a study recently put out by the George Institute, which with Simone Pettigrew sort of leading on that piece of research, and I think it was around 33% of primary school teachers reported use of e-cigs in primary schools. So, yeah, they're starting very young, and that looks to be, I think, a real area of concern, to be honest.
I'm speaking with Luke Vanderbaker. He's the co-founder of the Behaviour Change Collaborative. He recently worked on a report called Being Gen Vape, which has looked at teenage vaping in Western Australia. You talked about social media being something that has encouraged some young people to take up vaping. I've also heard about adults sending kids social media videos to try and do the opposite, to show them how bad vaping is. Based on your research, what do you think will work when it comes to the messaging around vaping?
Look, if we're talking about messaging to teens, because obviously there's different messaging for different targets, so I think the messaging to teens specifically, I think we need to erode the belief that teens can control the impact of vaping and the addiction. So, as I said, what came through really clearly with the teens that we were speaking with was that they felt that they were in control. They very much underestimated the likelihood of becoming addicted. And so for us, really eroding that belief as part of the messaging, I think, is one useful approach. Also making it unappealing rather than uncool. There tends to be a view that, you know, we need to make this look uncool and that would appeal, but actually not so much the case in terms of what we're hearing. It's more about making it unappealing, so demonising the vape itself, not the behaviour of the person who vapes. Bringing facts to life, so sort of sticking to facts. We've heard a lot from teens that they just sort of want honesty and truth in terms of messaging around this stuff, and there is quite a lot of mixed messaging. And I think also really it's about building sort of self-efficacy. So we did a behavioural segmentation as part of this research. It fell out. And we're sort of really interested in what we can be doing with those upper primary school students just to build, say, self-efficacy and resilience so that they're able to, better prepared for their entry into high school. And that really just, I guess, includes making them aware of dangers and really having some conversations with parents around the kitchen table and parents getting better educated about vapes and what they are, what they contain, and so on.
It's interesting. I did wonder if there is value in targeting the message differently to different groups. Did you notice in your research at all whether any particular age group or gender seemed to find vaping more acceptable?
Well, no, again, and this speaks to the ubiquity, we really didn't see any differences, to be honest, in terms of age. That didn't seem to be a factor. And same with gender, it was very evenly spread. But I think within the groups of teens who are vaping themselves, probably fairly similar messaging across the board. I think that messaging around to parents is perhaps a slightly different matter, just in terms of wanting to, as I say, build their knowledge and understanding and provide them with ways to have sort of open and honest conversations with the kids. But no, it's very much... not linked to identity, not linked to age, not linked to gender. This is just, it's everywhere.
Luke, really appreciate your time this morning.
Great. No, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Luke Vanderbaker, he's the co-founder of the Behaviour Change Collaborative. It's a social enterprise. They recently worked on that report, Being Gen Vape, focused on teenage vaping in Western Australia, and recent figures nationally in recent days showing an increase in phone calls to different helplines relating to young people and vaping.